Top headline, of course, this morning, that non-farm payroll that came in at 275,000 jobs gained. The unemployment rate, though, inching up to 3.9%. Tell us how you feel about this non-farm payroll number.
It is a good number, not only because it beat expectations, which is around 200,000 jobs in February, but 275,000 is actually above the average monthly gain, which was around 230,000 over the prior 12 months, because I always think context really does help. So I think this is why you can see a bit of an uptick in terms of markets, a bit of pricing in of potentially a rate cut in June. But I would also add that the January non-farm payroll number was downgraded. It was a really blockbuster number of 353,000. That's actually been dropped quite a lot to 229,000. So February now looks like it's a pickup from where we were in January, as opposed to where we were this time last month, which was, wow, 350, 3,000. That means that employment growth was at that point 2.2% annualized up until January, looking at it over a quarterly period. And that seemed as if we were, it seemed very high, but it seemed as if, generally speaking, we are seeing acceleration into this year. So I think we still have this acceleration because of the change that I just described with the downgrade in January. But I think on the whole, it's a strong number, but it is a slightly mixed picture because, as you say, unemployment slightly ticked up 3.9%. There's going to be a bit of unevenness because of a lot of economic uncertainty, which I hope we can touch on. But I would just say, 3.9 from 3.7, these are very small changes. The overall picture is that unemployment below 4%. This is actually the 25th consecutive month that unemployment has been below 4%. And that's actually the longest stretch in more than 50 years. So the overall picture is, yes, a little bit uneven, as you would expect, given the macro context, but actually a really strong set of numbers around the labor market out this morning.
So let's talk about some of that economic uncertainty that you allude to. And of course, all eyes over the past couple of days are on New York Community Bancorp and the bailout there. What other sources of uncertainty are you seeing in the U.S. economy at the moment?
Yeah, I would certainly point out banking. I think a lot of the unusualness of this, period. And I describe it as a period because the U.S., from where I'm sitting across the Atlantic, is performing much better than Europe. Over here, it is a bit recessionary. So what's unusual at this time is the high interest rates, because normally when you're in this part of the cycle, interest rates, are low to support the economy, to support borrowing. But this is an unusual time. So as you know, I wrote a book called The Great Crashes. I'm always keeping an eye on what's happening on commercial real estate, what's happening in regional banks. And I would also say one of the reasons we have this unusual context of interest rates being restrictive is because we have uncertainty still in the Middle East. So looking at not just the conflict in Russia-Ukraine, but also the Red Sea, which we do touch on because it is important, because the increase in shipping costs eventually feeds through into higher prices. At the moment, it's fed through more in Europe, where it's increased the price of goods that are imported into the Eurozone by about 1.5%. We don't yet see that in the U.S. or globally, but that kind of headwind is one of the reasons why looking at forecasts of where the U.S. economy could grow this year in 2024, it could be slightly less than the 2.5% growth from 2023. And I think that picks up a bit of the uncertainty and why, even though the labor market is robust, inflation is still considerably above the 2% target. And there's still quite a bit of, I would say, concern about where these economic headwinds may settle.
We're speaking with Professor Linda Yu, fellow in economics at St. Edmund Hall, Oxford University, and professor at London Business School. And if you were to characterize the U.S. economy, would you characterize this as a late cycle expansion?
Ooh, I would actually. It's a very nice way of describing it. So because we are in this period of uncertainty, you do end up with, well, as I say, you could end up with, you know, a bit of a pickup. But here's another set of figures that came out this morning, I think, that could illustrate what I'm describing. So we also had average hourly earnings. So that's up 4.3% from a year earlier, slightly lower than expectations. The forecast was for 4.4%. So if you take that in conjunction with the job openings figures that came out on Wednesday from the BLS, that was 8.9 million job openings. But that's also slightly down from 9 million the month before. So in this part of the cycle, you would expect a bit of bumpiness, but then, which is what these average earnings figures show, which is what the unemployment figure shows. But on the whole, it is still expansionary. And you see that in markets. And you see that being priced in terms of bond yields, because I think the expectation is we are resilient, but the reason why two-year treasury yields are slightly down today is because markets are now fully pricing in a rate cut of 25 basis points, a quarter of a percent in June. So that's what's really telling you is, in this part, even though it looks like, you know, it's all pretty strong set of figures, there's so much economic headwind, there's a lot of downside risk that financial markets don't think the central bank is going to keep rates as restrictive as they are. So by pricing a rate cut in June, they're basically saying the cycle will turn then. So anything we have in the next couple of months, even if it's expansionary, isn't changing, you know, this feeling that the economy actually needs more support. You know, but as I say, that being said, quite a lot of the issues, structural issues around the labor market, are also weighing down on sentiment. And I think this goes beyond the cycle, but it's just worth mentioning, because if you look at the employed share of the adult population, it's still lower than what it was before the pandemic. So before the pandemic, it was around 61%. So some of the shortfall in the employment rate is due to lower labor force participation. So these kinds of structural issues is also why I think markets think the economy needs a bit of support. And that's why the reaction today is great set of figures, but we can see the unevenness. We can see that this probably is a late cycle expansion. And we think that the Fed is going to cut rates as soon as June and take it out of restrictive territory. And by doing so, maybe can actually help address some of these other issues which are holding the economy back, maybe. Cheaper borrowing costs makes it more likely people have more money to spend, businesses face a lower cost of capital. Maybe that could help address some of the labor force participation issues. And so to me, that is a really good way of summarizing where we are at this point.
And now let's talk finally about what's going on across the pond. The ECB deciding to hold rate steady, that it foresees a slower rate of growth this year. Tell us how the European economy is looking at the moment.
Yeah, the ECB held rates at 4%. Yeah, generally speaking, the Eurozone economy, and actually here in the UK, are not doing as well as the US. So Germany is almost certainly in a recession. This is actually what its own central bank has said, and that's the Bundesbank. And Germany is the biggest economy in Europe. And they specifically say that growth is being held back by high interest rates. So the fact that interest rates are restrictive and haven't moved is now causing Germany, the biggest economy, to be, well, the central bank said, having headed into a recession. Europe is also quite affected by exports. So again, looking at Germany, weak demand for its exports is related to China's weakness, because they sell a lot of capital goods in China. Europe also sells a lot of luxury goods in China. So the fact the world's second biggest economy is slowing has a bigger drag on Europe than it does on the United States. So the question there is, if the central bank is pointing out that rates are too restrictive in the Eurozone, given the state of the economy, then the ECB is under greater pressure to ease rates. 4%, by the way, is like a record high for the Eurozone. But the ECB is concerned about inflation slowing less than expected. So inflation in February was 2.6%. And the biggest component of that is very high services inflation. Services is the biggest part of the Eurozone economy, and that was 3.9%. So they are facing this, as I say, this weird combination of being recessionary, but they're having very high inflation rates. And I think this is going to continue to dampen demand. But because the ECB is independent, they are going to continue to look at inflation before that inflation has slowed sustainably and doesn't need to hit their 2% target, but needs to be moving ever closer and sustainably to their 2% target before they will cut rates. So that likely means the Eurozone. And then I would say the EK is in a similar position, is going to have a pretty challenging next first half of this year because the restrictive rates is dampening economic activity here in Britain as well. And until you do see the rates beginning to come down, which may not be until the summer, until the rate setters are confident that inflation has slowed and there's no other shock from the Red Sea and from everywhere else, I think they will hold the stance, which means that I think Europe will be stagnant, if not recessionary, in the first half of this year, which again, by comparison to the U.S., is weaker. And this is a function of lots of things, including Europe is actually more exposed to the global shocks because the U.S. is actually less exposed. Most of the U.S. growth is domestic demand. Europe imports a lot more inflation. And this is why you're seeing this, one of the reasons why you're seeing these this divergent set of forecasts.
Linda, it's a pleasure as always having you on our show. If you could remind us, please, where we can follow your work.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. You can find me at Linda Yu, that's LINDAYUEH, across social media and my website, which is www.lindayu.com.